This is a weekly podcast about growing, designing, and selling flowers, and I'm your host, Sarah Nayani. I have a flower garden and a small floral design business here in Seattle, Washington, in the United States, and I love sharing my experience, the new things I'm learning, and then interviewing my friends and experts in this field through the podcast. This is season 2, episode 9, and today we get to speak with Renee Shepherd, who is the founder and owner of Renee's Garden. That is a garden-to-table seed company, and they offer heirloom and gourmet vegetable, flower, and herb seeds, as well as some plants and bulbs. They were one of the first companies I ever sourced seeds from back when I started growing flowers and veggies from seed in 2020. So I thought it would be super interesting to ask Renee about her company, their trial garden, some of her favorite varieties, and how sourcing and selling seeds works. When Renee and I were closing out our call, she offered to send along her cookbook, which is called Renee's Garden Cookbook, and a gift card for me to give away to one of our listeners, which was super thoughtful. So we'll be doing our giveaway over on the Flower Friends podcast Instagram. So you'll have 1 week from the date this episode airs to participate in the giveaway. And then while Renee and I do discuss some flowers in our conversation, there was a lot of veg convo, which I think you'll also love. But for flower lovers, I thought it would be good to mention up top some of the flower varieties I've grown and loved, because Renee offers some really cool, like different specialized varieties, and we didn't get to talk about all of them. So I'll just list these off here. The ones that I've grown and also loved are coral nymph salvia, which hummingbirds go crazy for, and it's just a really beautiful color. Love Lies Bleeding Amaranth, which is like the long tendril red, deep red amaranth that's really like romantic color. And I remember I grew that in 2020. It was one of the first like flower varieties that I grew, and it grew so tall. I grew it right under sunflowers, and then I cut those amaranth. They were maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet, and I held them in my arm and did one of those like classic florette photos that Aaron Benzikane from Florette is pretty famous for doing, where you hold them in front of you. And so that was kind of my first year of becoming a flower addict. And then Paradise Mix Echinacea is another one that I've talked about on this podcast before, and I got a really cool flower from that, which is like a pink and orange within each petal. And so it's sort of, I call it like the sunset echinacea. That was from Renee's Garden. I've grown her 4 o'clocks, the tea time mix, lots of varieties of sunflowers, so many kinds of sweet peas. She has some really cool offerings. And especially I like the Spencer varieties from her. And then hollyhocks, foxglove, bells of Ireland, Cobaya or cathedral bells is another one that I'm growing this year. It hasn't flowered yet, but I have it growing up this trellis, and it's this really pretty foliage, and it kind of creates like a separation of space in my garden, which I love. And then this year I also tried hummingbird penstemon, which is a perennial I planted that will start blooming next year. And so I'm really looking forward to that. Right now they have nice green stalks growing up from seed, and then hopefully next year we'll get some flowers. I've also grown their Scatter Garden pollinator mix, which this year I put behind my perennial bed on the ground, and then under my sweet pea tunnel I have some steps, and so I planted those Scatter Garden mix seeds around there, and it really brought in some pollinators underneath that tunnel. I also used to grow that in pots on my driveway when I was growing a lot more vegetables, and it was really helpful for bringing pollinators in on a cement driveway where there hadn't been plants before. It was like a signal to all the bees and birds and butterflies, like, come into this area, and then while you're here, pollinate my veggies while you're at it. So that was really nice to grow in pots as well. You could grow it in a field or take up, you know, grass that you have and grow flowers there instead. And I just think those are really nice. And then 2 other things that aren't seeds that I've grown from them are the scented geranium trios, which are beautiful and smell so good. They're perennial foliage that look really wonderful in flower arrangements. And I've grown their saffron crocus bulbs, which we talk about a little bit in the podcast episode as well. So I bring that up not as like an advertisement, but just to mention some of the really cool varieties of flowers that they offer. And you don't have to just get them from them, but I just think it's cool that they have unique flower varieties, some of which I had never heard of before I saw them on their website. And so I think that's cool to like expand the horizon and try different varieties beyond like the normal things that you see grown in cut flower gardens. Before we get to the interview with Renee, some updates from over here. It's a really beautiful day here in Seattle, nice and sunny again, but super muggy right now, which is kind of unusual to have this level of humidity here. So I kind of like it because it reminds me of the East Coast, but it tends to make everything feel so much hotter than it actually is. And my hair is definitely poofing out. So there's that. My husband and I this morning, we took our scooters over to this cute little place and got some coffee and some breakfast sandwiches. So that was really fun. Trying to build, especially when I have events and, you know, subscriptions and stuff, I'm trying to build in some more time to be like a tourist in my own city in the summer. And so my husband's really into the scooters that you can rent. And so we've just been taking those all over to different neighborhoods and just trying to enjoy the beauty and the nice weather while it's here. And so this morning, got up early and watered, and I'm trying to just start a new thing where like I pick one bed a day and just do something like weed it, mulch it, I don't know, just trying to make things look a little bit better because I get overwhelmed of trying to like clean the whole garden at the same time, and that's just not possible. So that's my new thing, is just trying to take it one bed at a time and not get overwhelmed by all the things at the same time. And so this weekend I did flowers for a beautiful bat mitzvah, which was at the Center for Wooden Boats here in Seattle. It's on Lake Union, and it's this really cool view. Like from one side, you're looking out over Lake Union and you can see Gasworks Park and, you know, float planes flying by, tons of sailboats and boats around. And then you turn around and there's this like boat museum right next door, and then the Space Needle on the horizon in the background, and the whole city skyline. So it was a really cool venue. I'd been there before, but it was really nice to appreciate it from that perspective. And just wonderful clients. They wanted a cream and orange color palette with some sort of periwinkle, peach, and yellow accents to it. So it was a really beautiful, like, summery color palette. I was able, for the cream component, to get my hands on the most beautiful Lisianthus I've ever seen from Will Dry Farm up in Bellingham. And it was just big and beautiful, does really well in the heat, and just a beautiful flower that looks like a rose, but it lasts for like 2 weeks. So anyway, that was such a score to get my hands on that. And then I sourced from my garden, my friend Margaret's garden, and then Seattle Wholesale. So all local flowers. I was able to get everything from Washington. And it's just nice to have clients who want that beautiful summery feel, you know, and a certain color palette that they want, but they're flexible on the actual flowers that are used so that we can use the best of what's in season and keep it super local. Then this coming week, I'll be preparing my flower subscription deliveries. And on Friday, I have my flower friends who you've heard on this podcast before coming over for our little monthly garden meetup. And then on Saturday, super excited to be a freelancer for another amazing local florist up in Woodinville. So super excited to work on an arch with her and just see what that's all about. In the garden this week, I'm planning to try some cover crop. I want to get some of my beds that are on top of cement, and then also some that are on top of like the sidewalk area. There's dirt underneath them, but I still want to improve the nutrients there. So I have some beds that are finishing up, and I ordered some cover crop mix from Johnny's that I'm going to try. It was recommended by Margaret Ullman Hess at Ballard Urban Flowers. So really excited to try cover cropping a couple of my beds that are finishing up, getting that seed sown so they'll have plenty of time to germinate and grow a bit before things cool down for the season. And then those will add nutrients into the soil. And then at a certain point, I'll either cut those down or sort of fold them into the soil to get the nutrients fully decomposed before I plant the next flowers in there. I haven't cover cropped before, so I'll let you know how it goes. I'm usually just adding back nutrients with compost and organic fertilizer, but this will be my first time cover cropping, so I'll report back on the pod. I also wanted to report out some podcast recommendation updates. So our guest that we had on a few weeks ago, Rebecca Noble from LLB Florals in Australia, and she does the Dish the Dirt podcast, which I love. I just caught up to present day on that podcast and it is amazing, but I'm really sad that I'm like caught up now because when I'm processing flowers in my kitchen and just, you know, stripping stems and, you know, sort of pulling leaves off, I just get really bored doing that for hours when I have big orders or events. There's so many stems to process. So I'm always looking for new garden related or flower growing or florist related podcasts to listen to. And so highly recommend Dish the Dirt, but since I'm done with that, my little like iPhone recommendations recommended Grow, Cook, Eat, Arrange, which is Sarah Raven and Arthur Parkinson's podcast. And Arthur is Sarah Raven's florist. Sarah Raven is a really famous British gardener and grower who I love. I have some of her books. And I started at episode one on that podcast as well. And I'm really, really loving it. So just wanted to throw that out there if you're also burning through these flower-related podcasts. And I think I've mentioned it before, but the Let's Grow Girls podcast, I absolutely love. And that just returned as well with a great episode on hardy annuals. So just wanted to throw that out there for you guys if you're looking for something else to listen to. And we'll keep the Flower Friends Flower Fact question of the week related to those podcasts. So on the Sarah Raven podcast, her very first episode is about wintergreens and hellebores. And for hellebores, I wanted to ask about the best way to condition them. She has four tips, but just to get the longest vase life from hellebores, what are some of the ways that you can do that? So get the answer to that on the other end of this interview, and let's get over to chat with Renee. Okay, well, today I'm so happy to welcome Renee Shepherd from Renee's Garden Seeds. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk with you today.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And I was just mentioning before we started recording that I've been buying your company's seeds for a while, and I just love the varieties and the products you have. So I'm excited to ask you about some of them. And so the first thing is, where are you guys located?
We are, and I am, in Northern California, about an hour and a half south of San Francisco by car, up in the hills in a town called Felton, which is near some of the Redwood parks. We're also close to Santa Cruz, California, which is famous for its boardwalk, but we are not on the coast, so we have a much warmer and colder climate. And then we also trial new varieties in Vermont to make sure that they will grow successfully in very cold climates. And then our shipping warehouse is in Colorado, sort of in the middle, which makes it easier to get things all over the country.
Absolutely. And can you describe what you offer?
Okay, well, Renee's Garden is a company that sells seeds for home gardeners exclusively. We don't sell seeds to farmers or growers, just for home gardens. And we pick varieties to offer our customers that we like ourselves, meaning that we test everything first in our trial gardens and then write our own packet backs. And we get the seeds from all over the world, wherever they grow best. But we sell both vegetables that are chosen for easy culture and very good flavor, because we do a lot of cooking, kind of oriented cooking from the garden. And we sell a complete line of culinary herbs, and then lots and lots of flowers, focusing on many varieties of things that are real favorites. So we sell 18 different colors of zinnias and 27 different colors of sweet peas, and lots of flowers, both new and old. But our hallmark is that we only offer things that we have thoroughly tested and like ourselves. Kind of like to treat our customers as fellow gardeners who would be interested in the same things we are.
I wanted to know, how did you start selling seeds? Like, how did you start this business?
Well, I've been in this business for most of my adult life, and I started years and years ago. I was teaching at the University of California at Santa Cruz, which is the closest big town, and we used to play soccer on our field, which is now the Trail Garden, and we used to invite all the European graduate students we could because they really knew how to play soccer, and we really didn't. This is going back in time, obviously. And I became very good friends with one particular guy who's still a very good friend who had come here from Holland to sell seeds to the many, many farmers in our region who grow lettuces. And he saw that I had a little garden. He said, how would you like to try some varieties that really are bred for flavor? Because at home, he was from Holland, people shop often for food and they really want varieties that taste good, not the chip and store well. I tried some of what he offered me. It was so good. I decided to share my discoveries with other home gardeners. And
wow.
I called up a few people in the seed business, being not knowing anything about starting a business. Like I called up Rob Johnson from a company that's still very prominent, Johnny's Select Seeds. And
yes,
asked questions. And I called up the guy who then owned Gardener's Supply. And they were very generous with advice. And so I started a seed company, and my friend Case helped me buy seeds at first. Then gradually I came to know seed producers, both domestically and overseas, and that's how I got started.
So at first, was it like a storefront or a shop, or were you mailing seeds? Was it like a catalog? How did you sell them?
We had a print catalog for a long time. I ran it out of my extra bedroom.
Wow.
And you know, was were the early days, were the heydays of catalogs. Now we are entirely online because we make a lot of videos. We have a lot of garden resources. Selling seeds online is great because you can add new information, lots of pictures, videos when we think they're needed. So I'm very happy being all online.
How did you select what you were going to sell at first, besides the one that your friend had introduced you to? Did you go for mostly flowers, vegetables? Like how did it start and sort of evolve over time?
Well, I really like to cook. And so I started out mostly with vegetables and herbs, and I met lots of seed growers. I did a reasonable amount of traveling, and there are also two or three big meetings. One takes place in the U.S., and there's usually one that travels where most seed growers of any size come, and you can meet them and talk to them and talk about what you're looking for and what they have. So I found new varieties that way, and by word of mouth and by learning more about seed growers. And I did definitely started with vegetables. I also, when we had a print catalog, tried to develop a new recipe for most every year for most of the things we sold, because if I convince you to try to grow edamame beans or radicchio, then you probably needed some ideas on what to do with them.
Yeah.
Or if I got you to grow green beans and you use the three ways you've always made green beans, then you needed some new ideas. So I've always had a very strong eye on how to use things in the kitchen.
That's wonderful. Do you use any flowers in the kitchen at all?
Well, we have a pretty good array of edible flowers, and yes, I use a lot of herb blossoms and make lots of jellies and flavored beverages and so on and so forth. But flowers, I just love. I like to cut fresh bouquets for as much of the season as possible, and I love flowers. So flowers have always been a focus, and I live in an area where the first really available organic gardens started up many years ago. And there's a lot of organic produce and flowers produced here. So we've always had that emphasis too. We carry both conventional and certified organic seeds.
And so what's the process for carrying certified organic? Is it a big process to get certified that way?
Yes, our warehouse is certified. And when you're certified facility like that, all the organic seeds have a pedigree. In other words, they have paperwork that proves they were inspected and grown organically. The organic standards in Europe are what they call, and Canada, harmonize with our standards, so we can import and export organic seeds that way. Now, I don't export any seeds. Obviously, I don't grow any seeds aside from our trials, but growers do. And then our warehouse is certified that we keep everything separate and have paperwork to prove that anything we have that's certified organic is certified organic. It's the certification for organicness is a federal program administered by many certified agencies. So we have a full range of organic seeds. We are organic gardeners and farmers and growers, or gardeners in our test gardens, but we grow organically. In other words, I don't sell all organic seeds. I sell a lot of conventional varieties that are not available organically grown, but I grow them organically. And that's what most home gardeners do too.
That makes sense. Definitely. It's nice that you have that option from the seed to have it be organic the whole way through as well for some varieties. And do you also sell some plants? Because I know just one thing that I've gotten from you guys are the scented geranium and then actually also the saffron bulbs. And so do you have other offerings besides seeds that you could tell us about?
Just the kind of things you're talking about. In other words, things that are really important in the kitchen or in the garden and have just a lot going for them in terms of flavor or scent or beauty that don't come from seed have to be offered as started plants. And our trial are very talented. Trial garden manager Lindsay has a little nursery on the side, so she grows all our plants. And she starts them from mother plants like your scented geraniums, and then she grows them out and pots them up when they have real nice strong root systems. And she does a great job. That would be things like lemon verbena or tarragon that really aren't propagated from seed. The saffron bulbs, I just have discovered that they're fun and easy to grow. They're imported from Holland. That's where saffron bulbs are grown for bulk distribution.
I had never known that saffron was from a crocus bulb. And so I was just, I kind of start my spring or I guess my seed organization, like in the fall and early winter by sort of like looking through every single item on your website, just because you have some fun things I've never even heard of or thought to Google. And so when I saw the crocus bulbs that make the saffron, I just had no idea that that's where they were from. So it was a really, really fun find. Did you grow them that way? Yeah. How did you find them?
Well, we do sell daffodils, and I noticed that they sold saffron crocus and learned a little more about it. There's a lot of interest in growing saffron in the United States. So there are now both university related extension groups and private groups that are really working on producing it in larger quantities. But I found out that you can grow them. Saffron grow from crocus bulbs that are planted in the fall. And that's the key thing. They are actually dormant in the summer. So you have to mark where you had them. So and you can plant over them, but then you have to clear your plants away. So when they come up in the fall, which they do in very late fall, they can actually bloom through frost and light snow. And each bulb produces three blossoms the first year, and then they multiply the number of blossoms. So they come back every year in most of American climates, not all. Sometimes you have to lift them. And then you pick out the stamens and dry them on a paper towel, and that's saffron. Yeah, it's pretty easy to do, and they're very rewarding and lots of fun.
Lots of fun. And I think saffron is one of the most expensive spices by weight, too. So it's really cool that you can grow it yourself.
Yeah, if you have a good bed of them and take care of them well, in a few years, they multiply. The bulbs produce quite a few blossoms. You have to pick them every day for the 2 or 3 week period while they produce and pull out the little orange stamens. And it's sort of fun to do, actually. And then you dry them and there you are.
Can you kind of walk me through the process on seeds of how you trial them in your own gardens and then how they're grown out for sale?
Well, for example, this year we sell edamame beans. So we have been importing the beans to grow edamame beans. Edible soybeans are quite different than the kind of soybeans you think of as a commodity for animal food or oil. They are varieties that are bred for eating. And we imported them from a long time from Japan. And that would be typical. And then we get the recommendations of the producers of which they think are best for home gardeners, which will go best in different climates. And then we'll trial them here and in Vermont to see if they grow well and compare varieties and find the one that grows best and tastes best, probably cook with it. And then we take pictures, and then the pictures go to our artist who paints the watercolor of the variety for the front of the packet. We use watercolor portraits of things actually grown in our trial garden. Last year, for example, for 2023, we'll be introducing, we grew it this last season, very dark purple Napa cabbage. It's just stunning. It's a deep magenta. And I've been looking for very deeply colored vegetables because the more color, the more antioxidants vegetables have. So people want to eat through the rainbow. That's why blueberries are so popular now. So this is, beside being crispy and delicious and mild flavored, it's also dark purple and it holds its color. And so I asked a lot of vendors that I know and found a South Korean company that has two or three varieties. And we trialed all three varieties and picked the one that was most uniform, tasted best, and produced uniform heavy heads.
And so once you trial them and you select the variety that you like, are they being, do you order more and that's what you're selling? Or are there certain farms that are sort of like tasked with growing the seed or producing those?
We do grow a few varieties out on contract with growers.
Okay.
Like there's a few tomatoes that we can't get anywhere else. But mostly I am not in the seed growing business.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to find the best varieties, keep a constant supply for consistency, germination, and quality. So I am buying those purple Napa cabbage from the company that developed the variety in South Korea.
Gotcha. And then bringing them to the U.S. market, the best ones that are growing in this area and that you liked the best.
Yeah, I am importing the seed. The seed will arrive at our warehouse. And our trial garden manager, Lindsay, who's also our video MC, by the way, if you watch, we have a lot of videos on how to do stuff. I actually think when we have one on Edamame, when to pick them and stuff. But anyway, she's the person who manages our seed buying. And we have a lot of varieties, like 800. So that's a big job.
And so who is the artist that does the artwork on your seed packets? Because that's a really wonderful feature.
Her name is Mimi Osborne.
Okay.
She is a botanical illustrator that I've known for many years. She lives in San Francisco, but she lives most of the nicer weather months on a little farm place that she has in Sonoma County, and grows a big garden. And she is also a dolphin. She swims in San Francisco Bay.
Wow.
So she's an amazing woman, very talented artist. And we send her photographs and a description of our new varieties. We used to, years ago, actually send her the produce, but that got to be a big logistics problem. So now we just take lots of snap, 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 just like if the vegetable was a model. And we send her all the pictures, and then I talk to her about it, and then she paints a portrait.
So you kind of have two processes going on at the same time of picking the varieties that you want and ordering them and getting everything ready. And then you've got the photos and the seed packets, and then everything meets at your warehouse, I'm guessing. And so is that where everything's packaged for sale?
Yes, everything's packaged there. Okay. And I was just going to say, on flowers, we often make our own mixes. So
so
if we want to make a mix of zinnia colors, we'll grow the color singly and then combine them and then name the mix. So for example, we want to have a mix of really bright colors, we'll grow them ourselves and then make the mix up. Similarly, for mescaline or baby leaf lettuces, we'll work with the grower to pick the varieties that are in it. So we actually kind of like have a say in what goes in the packets.
How are you choosing flowers? Do you want to talk about some of the varieties that are some of your favorites for maybe annuals and perennials?
We sell mostly annuals.
Okay.
Because perennials are much slower and fussier to start from seed.
Yes.
And our kind of tagline is, garden to table from seeds and success with seeds. So we want our customers to be successful with what they grow. I am really interested in old-fashioned and heirloom flowers, as well as wonderful color combinations of common flowers. So we sell lots and lots, for example, of zinnias, but in unusual colors and color combinations. We sell 22 different varieties or color combinations of annual sweet peas. We sell lots of cosmos, lots of sunflowers, and lots of salvias, many, many flowers for pollinators, which has become a great interest of a lot of American gardeners now, which is gardening for nature, gardening to have feed pollinators and lots of wildlife for the backyard. So we look for things that are both wonderful to pick and cut for bouquets and that support bees and hummingbirds and native bees and the many insects that keep our gardens going.
And speaking of those mixes that you had mentioned before and the pollinators, I know you guys have some like scatter garden varieties. Could you kind of explain what those are and how a home grower might use those?
Yeah, we sell larger quantities of seeds in cans that look like oatmeal cans, you know, like a Quaker Oats oatmeal cylinder. And yeah. We mix the seed with organic rice hulls to help spread it. You know, so you get distance between the seeds, and we call them scatter gardens, and most of them are for like 300 or 400 square feet. We have a scatter garden for cut flowers and one for pollinator flowers, one for cover crops, one for zinnias, one for sunflowers, one for poppies. You still need to prepare the soil, pull the weeds, turn over the soil. Scatter the seed, rake it in, water it up, and then you get a succession of bloom. So that's really nice for a little bigger area.
So I wanted to ask you, were you always an avid gardener even before your friend brought you those seeds?
My grandmother had a big backyard garden, and my mom used to drop me off there on Saturdays, and my grandmother and I would go in the garden and get what we were going to eat for lunch. So, and I liked to eat a lot. So the food connection, I think. So I've always had a little garden and, like a lot of people, grown some tomatoes and some salads and so on. But gardening is like the way to access all the world's cultures and histories and stories. I mean, people have been gardening and growing food for millennia. And so it's a wonderful way to learn about history and culture and everything else. I mean, we work with seed companies in Czechoslovakia and Japan and France and Italy and South Korea and the United States. And I know people from there, and you learn their food ways and you learn where recipe components come from, and it enriches your life because it's really about history. And then it's about the joy and satisfaction. I have been having a garden for years and years, but it's still a wonderful miracle when seeds germinate and watch them grow. There's hardly anything that can be more satisfying and thrilling, and you can have it all in your backyard and make a real difference in your life, in your health and nutrition, and make the world a better place. It's fun and meaningful. So I'm in a business that can spread hope and pleasure and good things. So I love it a lot. We are able to give leftover seeds to a huge number of organizations, from community gardens, school gardens, prison gardens. So I get to see good things that are happening all over. You know, there are a lot of gardens developing in places that don't have access to fresh food. There's a wonderful, we send seeds overseas. It's just a wonderful way to connect with many, many good things in the world, which everybody needs these days.
I agree. What an amazing program. That's awesome. One thing I wanted to ask you is how often you turn over the varieties that you offer, like either add new ones of, say, one variety, like an eggplant or something, or are replacing the kinds that you offer with something new?
Well, one of the things we do in the trial garden, beside testing new varieties, is to try other varieties that might replace what we have, because seeds are being developed and produced, old heirlooms discovered all the time. So you know, we're always trying varieties as second sources because seed varieties like Lipsticks and Ras have life cycles. So sometimes the seed producers develop new varieties. For example, with spinach varieties, there are viruses that attack spinach. So they're always coming up with new spinach varieties that have more resistance. So we have to change with the times and keep up with disease resistance and new developments.
Okay.
So yes, we do have to substitute varieties as they're no longer available or something better has come along. There's always lots and lots of new things.
And you mentioned heirloom varieties. And what does that mean in terms of seeds?
Well, heirloom varieties are open pollinated varieties that have been around for more than 50 years.
Okay.
So it usually means, it used to mean a variety that had been saved because it had specially great qualities of flavor, color, taste, productivity, whatever, in a particular region. But nowadays, of course, you can go into the supermarket and get heirloom varieties, so they are being produced commercially. And there are many heirloom varieties that have particularly wonderful qualities. The question is, can you take them out of their habitat where they were developed, and will they still be and produce as well? So that's what we need to see. For example, a favorite heirloom tomato of many, many people across the country is Brandywine. But here where I am on the West Coast, they don't do very well because we have cold nights. So you always have to try things out, and I'm always looking for things that'll do well all over. So we sell heirlooms. We sell open pollinated varieties that are not yet heirloomed, and we sell lots of very good hybrids selected for home gardeners. And just in case you're interested, there are no genetically engineered seeds in the home garden seed market now, and there never will be. We don't want to sell them. Our customers don't want to buy them. They would cost a fortune and everyone would have to sign agreements. So that is not a concern.
Okay. That's great to know. Could you give a little 101 for someone who might not know the difference between open pollinated and are all F1 hybrids not open pollinated?
Yes. All F1 hybrids are not open pollinated. What does that mean? It means like, here's a favorite tomato that a lot of people grow. Early Girl, Big Boy Tomato, Celebrity, the Golden Orange, Cherries, Sun Gold, those are all hybrids, which means the two varieties of tomatoes have been selected for particular qualities. Like one might have incredible vigor and disease resistance, and the other has great flavor and is, you know, very tender. And you put them in a greenhouse and you grow them and you remove the male flowers of one and you cross them.
Okay.
In other words, you fertilize one variety female flowers with the male flowers of the other. And you can do that with bees in a greenhouse or you can do it by hand. And that produces a cross. Now that would be what Sun Gold is and the others. They are a cross between two varieties. That's called a hybrid. Now, those varieties, when you grow a Sun Gold, it will produce seed, no problem. But it won't be the cross. It'll be a new genetic variant. So if you grew out the seeds from your Sun Gold tomato, some of them would taste like Sun Golds, but others wouldn't have the same unique qualities. So a hybrid doesn't breed true. In other words, okay. If you plant a seed, you'll get plants, but you won't necessarily get the same plant. An open pollinated variety, on the other hand, you grow it, and if you separate it enough from similar plants, like you can grow an open pollinated, let's say, squash, and as long as it isn't too close to other squash plants, the fruits that you harvest, and if you save those seeds, they would produce the same thing over again because they are pollinated by wind or they are pollinated by pollinator insects, or sometimes they are self-pollinating. So they breed true. In other words, you don't need to buy the cross each time. So with hybrids, you do need to buy the seed fresh every year. Both have obviously advantages. And then heirlooms are just open pollinated varieties that have been around for a long time.
Okay.
And for home gardeners, I particularly would always grow hybrid varieties of, for example, brassicas, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, etc., because they're earlier. They're much more vigorous. I think they have excellent flavor. So a lot of hybrids are bred for qualities that are important to home gardeners. But I grow a lot of heirlooms too. So all are appropriate and good to try. So you should always just try a mix and see what works for you in your microclimate.
All right. Well, I wanted to just ask a few questions about your trial garden, if I could. What does it look like this time of year? What are you excited about that you're seeing right now?
Well, let's see. Right now, we are growing out a variety we're going to offer for the first time next year. It's actually from Germany, and it's a climbing zucchini that I am calling Escalator.
Ooh.
It's an organic seed I found at a small organic seed company there, and these are zucchinis that will grow up a trellis, so you don't have to go scrounging around for the zucchini and find it. We're hiding under the leaves. They're really easy to pick, so that's super fun. And we are looking at new mixes of zinnia colors, and we are trialing some cabbages from Japan that are called sweet salad cabbages. So they're really, really sweet flavored. The idea is for using them in fresh salads and coleslaw, and they grow kind of globe shaped and really pretty. We're looking at some new edamame seeds that are getting grown in the U.S., which is something new, and we're going to compare them to the ones we get in Japan. We just grew out a bunch of our sweet pea mixes to make sure the colors were right. We're growing several, three or four dahlias from seed to see what they look like. We introduced one last year called Blazing Saddles.
Ooh.
Because they're wild red and orange colors. And we are looking at quite a few dried flowers, which are kind of making a comeback. So we're looking at a whole bunch of different color statuses and nigellas, cornflowers, celosias. So quite a bit of flowers this year. Some tiny, tiny little violas that are all uniquely differently marked in colors that I'm going to call fairyland for containers. And they kind of drape a little bit. Our company kind of specializes in varieties for containers and small spaces. So we're going to be introducing a new snap pea for containers, and we're looking at Tabasco peppers, trying to find one that will produce all over the country. So lots of melons, small personal size melons. So lots and lots of different stuff. Oh, and then we're introducing pink popcorn. And we tried quite a few little varieties of colored popcorns to find the one that you can actually shuck yourself and that will air pop. That was our standard. Had to really air pop well and taste great and not be tough.
Wow. Did you say pink? The color's pink?
Yeah. The ears are pink. It doesn't pop up pink. It's white popcorn when popped, but it's really crispy, tender, and delicious, and you can shuck it really easily. So that's what I mean. We don't just sell the seed. We want to make sure that it's usable and fun to use in the kitchen.
Definitely. That sounds very fun.
So I was playing around with popcorn balls, which was pretty easy to do.
That sounds great. What have you used to stick them together?
Well, I come from Cleveland, Ohio originally, and we had a very famous amusement park that is no more. And they had the best popcorn balls in the universe. And their secret was they put a tiny bit of vinegar in with the sugar.
Yum.
So I've been trying to figure that out.
Cool. Replicate a favorite.
I have not yet succeeded, but I will.
You will.
I have a lot of popcorn.
And you're also good at trialing. That's what you do. So, and I was wondering if you have any flower recommendations for a lot of the listeners grow flowers, and especially like you mentioned, a lot of people in small spaces. And if there's any beginners listening that want to, you know, garden and grow flowers, are there any you'd recommend highly to get started with?
Well, yes, I would recommend flowers that attract pollinators and beneficial insects that are great for bouquets and are pretty easy to grow. I want to say right at the outset, growing from seed, what's really important is to get the seed started and then thin them to their proper spacing. I know it is very hard for beginning gardeners, and it's still hard for any gardener. You grow a row of sunflower seeds 4 inches apart, They germinate, they're growing great. And then the packet says thin to stand 12 inches apart. And you're thinking,
yes.
Oh my God, I got to kill them. You know, I don't want to do that. A lot of them you can move. Or if you have a compost pile, you know, you can compost them and so they'll have a further life. But the truth is that all plants need enough room to spread their roots and grow and have strong stalks. And if you don't thin things, you're actually torturing them. Think of it that way. They won't have enough room to truly bloom for a long time, support what you want them to do, which is have a long season of production. So that's a really hard lesson to learn. But all our packets say thin to stand, and that makes sense. If you're growing vegetables, for example, if you're growing beets, think you want that beet to get about 3 inches in diameter, which means it needs room to grow, you know, on either side into a 3-inch beet, which means you have to thin them out. So that is something you have to do as a gardener, and it's important. And the other thing when you start seeds is to protect them from slugs and snails. There's good non-toxic organic solutions. And in many parts of the country, you need to put bird netting over them or aluminum foil ribbons they have that you can tie on netting to deter birds, because birds like to pull out seedlings. So if you grow a row of beans or sunflowers or sweet peas, they're there one day and not there the next. It is most often bird, slugs, or snails.
Okay.
There are many, many non-toxic organic disease and pest solutions now, whether it's barriers or actual disease control that are perfectly safe to use. It is not hard to be an organic gardener. You don't have to use poisons. So get a good local garden center, not the big box stores. They are well-meaning, but they don't have really trained personnel. They don't carry a wide range of products. See if you can find a local garden center with somebody knowledgeable to advise you. And then look on the internet. There's a lot of information. But for beginners in flowers, I would grow zinnias. I would grow sunflowers. I would grow cosmos. I would grow salvia, calendulas. There's a really lot of flowers, and it doesn't have to be the same old colors if you grow from seed. So I mentioned from seed, you can grow 18 different colors of, and more. We just happen to have that many of zinnias. There's many colors of cosmos, short ones, tall ones, fringed ones, double ones, single ones. Nasturtiums. I think we carry 18 different nasturtiums, and people think of them as being orange or yellow or red, but we sell cherry colored ones and chamois colored ones and climbing ones and fringed ones. So the world of flowers is huge and amazing and immense. So there's lots more variety than you may think. Even in sunflowers, you can grow ones that are the color of dark red cherries. You can grow ones that are bicolors, yellows, whites. You can have a lot of fun with it all the time, feeding bees, butterflies, hummingbirds, and generally enhancing, you know, everyday ecology and making a difference. So growing flowers is great.
Absolutely. We're big fans here. So, and do you have a favorite flower or a few favorites that you grow at your home?
Yes, I would say my current favorite flower, and I love all flowers, so every 6 months that would be something different, but I love columbines with really long spurs.
Oh, yes.
I love sapoglossus.
What's that one? I don't know if I know that.
It's also called devil's tongue.
Okay.
It's an annual flower, although it will overwinter in mild climates sometimes. They have big, like miniature lily-shaped flowers with painted throats in outrageous colors. Look them up on our website. They're totally fabulous. They are not particularly strong vase flowers, but they're wonderfully gorgeous.
Okay.
I love sweet peas because I love the scent. There's no other flower. They've never made sweet pea perfume because the scent of it is like nothing else. It's like orange blossoms with a hint of honey and never overpowering and never cloying. So they're one of my favorites and I grow them every year.
How do you grow your sweet peas? Do you do like a trellis or something in your yard? Or
by the way, we sell a couple varieties for for gardeners who don't have a big gardening space, you can grow lovely sweet peas in a pot. There's short draping varieties called Cupids that are very scented and are pink and white bicolors. And if you are growing in containers, don't think you can't grow sweet peas. But generally most sweet peas, and by the way, sweet peas are different species than edible peas, and you cannot eat them. You start them in cool, they're cool weather lovers. So where I am, we start them very early spring. We can also start them in fall because we're here, but in very cold climates, you start them in spring. And I think up in the Pacific Northwest, you can start them even a little later because you generally have plenty of cool, long springs.
And is there anything else you'd like to mention about your business, how you started it? Anything else you'd like to share with listeners?
Gardening is a skill that you can learn by trial and error and from other people. If someone has a beautiful garden, they'll be glad to share cuttings with you. They'll probably be glad to tell you how they grow things. Gardeners are usually people who love what they do. And I'd encourage everybody to grow a little garden. It's easy and you'll really enjoy yourself. And it's wonderful to have fresh flowers or a fresh salad every day just in your backyard. And you can certainly do it from pots. And it's a lifelong passion. I think I'm probably speaking to other people who agree, but
no, it really is.
It's one of life's joys and satisfactions to have a garden.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, you know, a bit of your story and then also your seeds and plants with all of us.
Oh, and I probably should say our website is renesgarden.com, renesgarden.com, renesgarden.com. And besides selling the things we sell, if you go to our garden resources section, we have lots of videos, articles, and we can really hold your hand if you are a beginner.
That's great. And I feel like, yeah, even on the back of your seed packets, there's such good information for how to get started. And like you say, go to your website to find out more.
And we do have a full-time horticultural advisor, Beth.
Oh, wow.
And she has grown all our varieties. She was my business partner for many years and she retired, but she handles all our customers' inquiries. And she's really knowledgeable. So if you have a problem, you can email us on our website and she will respond.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining today, Renee. It was wonderful to talk to you and can't wait to see what pops up in the garden from your seeds this year.
Well, thank you, Sarah. It was a pleasure meeting you. And obviously, I'd love to meet you in person because obviously we share a lot of things in common.
Yes.
So hopefully that'll happen sometime.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
It was incredible to speak with the Renee from Renee's Garden. It's a women-owned and operated company that I really admire. One part of the conversation that stuck with me was when Renee described gardening as a connector to cultures and histories around the world. That really resonated with me and is something I think about a lot. Whenever I'm gardening, I'm always reminded of how we're all connected. I know it sounds really cheesy, but from the smallest bug that we can't even see that's tending to the soil, all the way through to the animals and the humans eating or enjoying or building habitat or houses from what grows in that soil. I tend to think of the ecosystem connections, but what Renee shared also got me thinking of the human connections through time, both with food and flowers. This weekend, I designed with some Van Gogh sunflowers, and to think that these sunflowers that I was holding in my hands were the subject of a great artist's work over 100 years ago felt pretty inspiring. So that just really resonated with me, and I just wanted to repeat that part of what Renee said because I think there is so much to enjoying the outdoors and gardening beyond just our own personal enjoyment, but as a sense of connection and something that's really fulfilling. And on a related note to that, I figured out how to look at my podcast where it's listened to, which I didn't even know that I could do. And I clicked on this thing. I was like, locations, what does that mean? And I opened it up and I found out that this podcast has been listened to in 24 countries and that 20% of listeners are not in the US. And so I'm so sorry to all of you that I didn't realize we're listening in. This is the coolest information ever. I just want to say hi. And I just wanted to name some of the countries that are on here and just give you a shout out because I really need to change my focus a little bit to understand that people listening to this aren't just in the US, they're in different climates all over the world. And, you know, where it might be winter in Australia and it's summer in the US, I need to adjust what I'm saying to think about that a little bit more. And also, I know I give things in like temperature in Fahrenheit instead of Celsius. So I'm going to try to get better at, you know, using more of the Celsius temperatures or, and also some of the metric system to describe heights and things like that. So I just wanted to shout out Canada, Australia, the UK, Germany, New Zealand, France, Sweden, Denmark, Mexico, Belgium, Hungary, the Faroe Islands. Hello, Faroe Islands. Spain, Ireland, Ukraine, China, India, Switzerland, Iraq, Czechia, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Netherlands, Argentina, and Italy. Hi, welcome. And it is so nice to meet you. I think gardening really brings people together and it's just so cool to know that like we're all connected. I can't believe people are even listening to this. So thank you. And also, hi, we are flower friends near and far, and I just am amazed by all of the things that I see people in this community doing for each other, for bringing enjoyment to people's lives through gardening or floral arranging, farming. So I just want to say, hey, what's up? You flower people are the coolest, and I am so lucky to be a little small part of your day and of, you know, this community. I feel so lucky. So sorry, I'm really sappy. I'm recording this exit, what do we call it? Intro, outro. I'm recording this outro later at night. I did the intro in the morning. So maybe the nighttime is making me feel more sappy, but I just really appreciate this community that's forming. And I just feel so lucky to, I don't know, get to do a podcast and get to talk to all these amazing heroes and flower friends that I get to interact with near and far. So anyway, I wanted to mention that this episode was going to be the finale, and I heard back from someone that I had reached out to a couple months ago, and we were able to schedule a convo this past week. So I have a really cool surprise for you guys as the season 2 finale. So that episode will be out next Monday, and that will be the end of season 2. I'm going to take a little break, and in the meantime, I'll try to put out some small mini episodes. I want to do one on flower bulbs, things like tulips, daffodils. I want to describe the flower bulb lasagna that I love doing. And I wanted to put out a few other mini things if there's any updates or things going on. So just wanted to mention that. And then don't forget that we have the giveaway of Renee's cookbook and a gift card to Renee's garden. So you can get seeds, you could get saffron crocus bulbs, whatever you want from her website. So go to the Flower Friends podcast Instagram to enter into that giveaway. And next week, this time, we will pick a winner. The Flower Friends flower fact was about how to condition hellebore flowers so that you can get the best vase life from them. And that's because a lot of times if you've ever cut a hellebore and done nothing to it, just stuck it in a vase with everything else, they often tend to droop, especially when the flowers on the hellebore are still fresh, so they still have like the pollen on them. And I know hellebores won't be blooming here in the northern hemisphere. See guys, I'm learning. For a few months here, but this is a great time in the northern hemisphere to be purchasing hellebore plants and getting them in the ground if you're interested in having some great like winter blooms that really can start in January, February time frame, depending on where you're living. And then I believe in the southern hemisphere, hellebores are actually probably just about or already in bloom. So there we go. I thought this would be good timing to just think about hellebores. So a lot of videos I saw going around about how to condition hellebore stems last February timeframe, but I wanted to give the advice that Sarah Raven gives right from the source. So she says to pick them ideally when one of the flowers on the stem already has a seed pod. So the pollen anthers have dropped, and it doesn't have to be all of the flowers are seed pods, but just at least one on the stem has turned into a pod. And then she says to sear the stems an inch and put them right into a sink of cold water. So just lay the whole flower down in cold water after you've seared them, and ideally let them sit in cold water overnight to really hydrate, soak up that water. And then you should be able to arrange with them. She says once they're in arrangements that they're still very temperature sensitive. So they're a flower that you wouldn't want, you know, anywhere close to your a heat source, having it in the kitchen where you're cooking, something like that is going to make it droop again potentially. So to extend the vase life, you want to keep it in a cool area. That's true of most flowers, but some are more tolerant than others of heat, and hellebores are not one of them. So I hope that is useful information to you. If you already know that or you have other tricks that you love to use for conditioning hellebores, please share them with me. You can direct message me or email me, and I'll share your recommendations. The song of the week is You're All I Need to Get by Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. So that'll do it for us this week. See you next week for the season 2 finale, and hope you're all hanging in there. Talk soon. Bye. Like the sweet morning dew, I took one look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.